There are many, many reasons I love Jesus. But one of them is he loved to eat. Think about this. The supper. All you have to say in Christian circles is the supper. Everybody knows what you're talking about. It's the body and the blood that makes us whole. But long before we get to this table, Jesus shows us he loves to eat. Do you know that other than the resurrection, the only miracle that shows up in all four Gospels is the feeding of the 5,000? Now that's a dinner party. And the feeding of the 4,000, which is different, shows up twice. That's six gigantic dinner parties. In the book of Luke alone, there are about a dozen meal scenes. You get things like in the seventh chapter of Luke when they are at a Pharisee's house and they are dining and a woman comes in and anoints Jesus's feet and wipes them with her hair. They upbraid this woman, but Jesus says, no, she's anointed me for my burial. And in Luke, she's called the sinful woman. And Jesus forgives her. That meal scene is used to teach about forgiveness. And then in the 10th chapter of the same gospel, Luke, you know that Mary and Martha story. Mary is in the kitchen knocking pots, but Martha's in the kitchen. Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. Martha comes out and upbraids Jesus. And Jesus tells her, you're worried about too many things. Mary has chosen the better part. In that story, Jesus breaks all kinds of rules because women are not to sit at the feet of the rabbi to learn as a disciple. He uses that meal story to teach about inclusion. And just a couple chapters later, in the 11th chapter, he's again in a Pharisee's house, again at a meal, and the Pharisees criticize him because his disciples don't do the ritual washing. And Jesus tells the Pharisees, you are worried about the outside. I'm worried about the inside. He uses that meal scene to teach about holiness. And you also know the story of Zacchaeus, chapter 19, Gospel of Luke. Jesus is walking along and Zacchaeus, hated tax collector. Think about a corrupt IRS officer. And think about inviting him or inviting yourself to dinner at the corrupt IRS officer's meal table. Jesus looks up and sees this man, hated tax collector, and says, Zacchaeus, I'm going to dine at your home today. In that moment, Jesus teaches nobody is beyond the boundaries of the kingdom. Nobody is beyond the boundaries of forgiveness. Think about these meal scenes. Jesus is teaching fundamental lessons, holiness and inclusion and forgiveness, and everybody can have a place at the table. And then the two texts Carol read for us today are no different. In the first one that she read, the story of the table, did you hear? The last line of that beautiful text that we often use for this moment when we gather at the supper. The last line of that pericope which Carol read is, and the one who's going to betray me, his hand is on the table. And just a few lines earlier, Jesus has said, but you know what? I eagerly desire to eat this meal with all of you. So let's get this clear. At this table, which we represent on First Sunday, at this first table, Jesus says, I've wanted this meal with you for the longest. But I know at this table, those who will deny me, those who will desert me, those who will lie on me, those who will betray me, your hands are right now on the table, but it doesn't change my desire to be with you. This table, these tables are there to teach us the fundamentals of our faith. And the table that's in Luke 14, the table that inspires the banquet, inspires the banner that hangs nearest the organ, that adorns the front of your bulletin, the table that inspires that phrase, come for all is ready, is also a dining scene. Jesus has again in the 14th chapter of Luke been invited to a Pharisee's house. The Pharisees were trying to learn something. And if you read the very first verse of the 14th chapter, you'll see it says they invited him, but they were watching him. They were watching him intently. They were waiting for him to make a mistake. And in that early part of chapter 14, they bring before Jesus a man who is ill, a man who needs healing, but it's the Sabbath. And they try and trick Jesus and they say, do you heal on the Sabbath? And Jesus says, if something you valued fell in a ditch, wouldn't you bring them out? He messes with them. He asks them a question that they don't really know the answer, and he heals the man. But he's not finished messing with them. He then begins to talk about the table at which they're sitting. And he begins to tell them, the way you have organized the seating pattern is wrong. You see, you've got folk who think they're larger than anybody else, and they sit in the front seats. But that's not the way I set a table, Jesus says. The way I set a table is that you realize your humility, and you take a lower seat, and you are invited up, because you will be embarrassed if you sit there and they ask you to sit there. Jesus teaches them about humility, and he's still not finished messing with them. Because then he says to the host, by the way, you are using conventional ways of invite. You invite people to your house who can invite you back. You don't invite people who don't have the wherewithal to feed you. So this is a gig. This is a scheme. You're just inviting people who can invite you, and you keep the wealth and you keep the power in a single circle. That is not my way. And then, only then, after teaching about humility, after teaching about inclusion, after teaching about the welcome and the blessing of healing that man who was brought, only then does Jesus begin the parable. And it was told that someone planned a great banquet. Now be really clear. In the first century, invitations came in two parts. Remember, there's no email, no snail mail, nothing. So your servants have to go out. And your servants go out the first time to say the banquet will be presented in this time frame. Mark your calendars. And when all is ready, we will come back around and tell you. So that means it's been stamped on their calendar. They know when it's going to happen. So when all of a sudden the three people who've been invited come up with these excuses, they are lame and it doesn't work. First of all, you wouldn't have bought land without looking at it or a yoke of oxen. And if you were getting married, it would have been on your calendar and you would have said no in the first place. Lame excuses. And the master of the house becomes furious and sends his servant out to bring the people in. And still the house is not filled. And the master sends the servant out again and compels people to come. Now you may wonder about that word compel, but here's what's going on. In the first century, cities were fortified and had gates. The gated communities have been here a long time. And if you were not rich enough, if you did not have status enough, if you were not a property owner, if you were not one who could afford to live within the city gates, by the time night fell, you had to be beyond the city gates, and they were locked and you were kept out. And if you were caught in the city, you could be stoned. So no one would come in the city who did not belong there, like those who were not able-bodied, like those who were poor, like those who were lame, like those who were blind. The very ones that were being invited, they would not come because they knew they had to be gone by nightfall. But the master of the house says, compel them, bring them to my house, because in my house there is safety. In my house they are welcome. In my house they will find food and nourishment and blessing. Compel them to come, that my house may be full. I'll tell you, when I read that parable, my habit is to think of myself as the one beyond the gate. My habit is to think of myself as the one without power and without status. My habit is to think of myself as the one that would be sought after and invited and welcomed into a place I've never been before, into bounty that I've never seen before, into blessing that I could not have imagined. I want to think of myself as one of the lesser who is waiting to be compelled and brought in and made home. But you know what? I live in Buffalo Grove and you live in Arlington Heights, Palatine, Barron, and you are not outside to get. Let's just be clear. You do not live in a place where bullets fly more often than sparrows. You are not going home to an empty refrigerator, and you're not worried about anybody, Bonnie, coming into your condo and pulling you out of bed at night because your political beliefs don't align or your religious beliefs don't align with the powers that be. We are not the ones outside the gate. We might be the one with the lame excuses, but we're probably the master of the house. We're probably the ones who know power. We're probably the ones who have the ability to invite into our circles those who have been marginalized and those who have been left out. We're probably the ones who have the power to realize we've been rigging the way we set our tables and we don't understand humility. We're probably the ones who think of the Sabbath in such a way that we wouldn't deign to do something so dirty. We're probably the ones that Jesus was talking to. Or maybe we're the servants. What if when you read this parable, you put yourself in the place of the servants? You see, some translations call them slaves, but I did a lot of work on this part. They're not slaves in the sense of people who are mistreated in the master's house. They're partners with the master. They're like Joseph was in Pharaoh's house. They are those who organize the master's business. They are those who know the master's love. They're those who benefit from the master's beneficent way. The servants in the story who go out to compel others in are ones in the story who've known the warmth of the master's love, who've known the power of that presence, who've understood the grace of the master's forgiveness, who understand what it's like to sit at a table that is laden and bountiful, who understand what it's like to be in a place where they are welcomed and where they're safe, where they are accorded a status, not the master status, but still status. They are the ones who are secure in their being, secure in their understanding of who they are and how they serve and what their purpose is. What if we are the servants? What if we are the ones who hold in our heart and in our mouth stories of what it's like to be at the master's table? What if we are the ones who understand what it is to be invited and to be welcomed? And what if we are the only ones who can go out in the world and tell those who are beyond the city gates, and even tell those with the lame excuses, oh, let me tell you about this table. It is a table of forgiveness. It's a table of inclusion. It's a table of power. It's a table where you will be nourished. And all the master wants you to do is come, because everything is ready. And even if you are like those who will deny or betray or lie on or desert, you're still welcome. For this is a table of transformation. This is a table where we come and we eat and we realize how loved we are, where we come and we eat and we realize we are the ones welcomed and thought worthy to be at the table. What if we're the servants? And unless we go out into the highways and byways, those with the lame excuses and those who are beyond the gates will never hear of the invitation. Beloved, I don't know where you see yourself in the story, as the one beyond the gate, as the master, as the one with lame excuses, or as the servant. But I know this. When I read the story of the first table and Jesus saying to those who are gathered around it, I have eagerly desired to eat this meal with you, I know that from heaven we hear, come, for all is ready. All is ready to heal the divisions in our nation. All is ready to gather the sources to feed the hungry. All is ready to gather the sources to beat this pandemic. All is ready to gather what we need to be a people who stand on God's word. All is ready. But the work is hard, and we need to be sustained. So I come today to tell you one thing. All is ready. The table is set. whether you've offered excuses in the past, like, I don't know about this Jesus thing. I don't feel worthy. The church has broken my heart. I just am not sure. All is ready. And you were the guest invited. Whether you are beyond the gate and you think whatever you've done makes you unworthy, all is ready. And you are the guest invited. And even if you are the one who imagines that you would never be welcomed, hear the words of the Savior. I have eagerly desired to eat this meal with you. Come. For he says, at this table is forgiveness. Come. For he says, you are the guest invited. Come. Because the world needs us. Filled with God's presence and God's power, willing to go and compel others to come, not out of duty, but out of love, to a table that is set in the very same way. Come, beloved, everything is ready.